And mainly what I want to talk about, and I don't have a lot of ideas, just a few basic principles, is how to establish healthy, balanced limits or guidelines for that period in your life. However, I think before I do that, what I'd like to do is discuss a topic that may or may not have been discussed during the course of your year in Israel. I think it's a very important topic. Some of you are going to feel that this topic is really not relevant to you. It's a little beneath you. Some might feel it's a little beyond you. I think many of you will feel that it's either relevant to you just to fill in, so to speak, something that you've always known, but you might not have really thought through why things are the way they are in the view of the Torah. And that's the question of why is premarital sex forbidden? Why is it not allowed? What's the problem? It doesn't seem to be a problem in the eyes of most of the people, the society that we come from, right? The culture that we come from, it's pretty normal. The question is, why is it that from where we come from the Torah, from the Torah's vantage point, it's forbidden, it's not allowed? So obviously, I don't know. Hashem didn't tell me. Hashem said it's forbidden. He didn't explicitly say why. But I think I could share with you some possible insights, and there are probably other reasons. Other reasons that you may have heard, you might have thought of, and reasons that none of us will ever know, as it is the case with all mitzvot, that we can never fully plumb the depths of God's wisdom, and we trust that He knows what He's talking about. So I just want to give you four straightforward ideas of why premarital relations is forbidden. So one of them has to do with the topic of selfishness. Men have an inherent attitude towards sex, towards sexuality, which is selfish. Which you can't blame them, because it's a very you experience. It's your body, it's your feelings, it's your experience. Sexuality is something that is felt. It's very powerful. And therefore it's very centered around the person who's experiencing it. And it's inherently or intrinsically potentially very selfish experience. That being the case, Hashem doesn't want us to be selfish. I think that's pretty obvious, right? We're put in this world to become like Hashem. Balach to bidrachav. So to be like Hashem means to be not selfish, but unselfish, selfless, right? As a matter of fact, God is the only creature, the only entity, only being that is 100% absolutely selfless, because he's the guy who's got it all. So there's nothing you can give him, right? Go buy him a gift for his birthday. He's got it already. So there's nothing you can give God. So it's completely, God's relationship with us is completely selfless. Our job, is to be like God. As a matter of fact, that is what we're here for 24-7, 365 days out of your 120 years on earth, is to become selfless. That's what it means, right? The rest is commentary. That's what it's all about. So one of the forces in the world which most undermines you being selfless is sex. It is an intensely self-centered experience. And what God wants us to do, it's like Mission Impossible. It's before your time. You never heard about it. Oh, there's a new one. Okay, hey, great. I'm relevant. Mission Impossible, He wants to take this unbelievably self-focused experience and make it as unselfish, or shall we say, selfless as possible. That's a big task. That is not a simple task. It's not done overnight. It's not done in a year. It's done in the context of a relationship. Because the only thing that can make sex not less selfish and really selfless is love. And the only place that you're going to find love is in a committed relationship. Committed meaning, that's it. That's for life. You're everything to me, and I've committed to you, and we're going to make this work, and we're going to have a wonderful relationship. And you are the center of my life. When you have love, then you can even take something like sex and make it selfless. If you don't have love, read committed relationship. Committed means legally committed. Not like, yeah, sure, I'm committed, sure. When you have a committed relationship, you can have love. When you have love, you can actually take the sex experience and turn it into a less selfish experience. And even then, it's not easy. Even then, it's an enormous challenge. But without the love, without the backdrop of love, and without the backdrop of a committed relationship, it's not going to happen. And what will happen is not only will sex not become, it won't become less selfish, it will not become redeemed, it'll just get ever more selfish. It'll get worse. That's number one. Number two is a person has to decide what he's here for. In this world, not here right now in this class. What is a person in this world for? Because it's always going to be, in everything you do, there's an ikar and a tafel. What's the ikar mean? What's the ikar? The main thing, right? Your main goal. What's a tafel? The secondary goal or a means to an end, an assistant, the mayonnaise on the... It's a very goyish way to say it. Mayonnaise on the bread, right? The cream cheese on the bagel. So, the same thing with life here on earth. Are you here for spirituality? Are you here for physicality? Are you here for ruchniut or gashmiut? Ruchnius or gashmius? It's a very simple equation. The truth is it's a fight to the death. There isn't really... You can't go both ways. You can't choose both. Now, what Judaism tries to do, you've heard this many times before, we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, it's not, you know, a concept that you need teaching, I'm sure you've heard, is that our approach is that we're here for ruchnius, for spirituality, and we take all the wonderful things in the world with us, the gashmius, and we use that to achieve spirituality. But the fact is, we've still chosen, right? We still have an ikar. And the relationship to the physical is that it's an assist, it's a means, it's a tefil, it's to help us. Right? So what happens with premarital sex is it becomes very difficult to be a spiritual person. It becomes very difficult for a few reasons. One of those reasons is that, I think this is the main reason really, putting aside the whole selfishness thing that we've discussed. This is number two, right, this is number two. That when you're involved in physical intimacy before marriage, so at the least it's a distraction, right? And at the most it becomes an obsession, and it's very hard to have to dance at two weddings, to have, you know, have two wives, to be committed to two jobs. It's very hard to commit to two things. So when you have that on your mind, and you have it on your mind anyways, because it's an implanted part of being a male, but when the flames are fanned, so you're not going to learn, you're not going to learn, you're going to learn? You're going to run after mitzvah and run after... You have a choice between hanging out with somebody and missing Marav. In other words, picture it like this. Let's say you start out life and... you know, the biggest thing in the world for you is a bottle of baby formula. Then you get up, then you discover juice, apple juice. Whoa, forget that. I don't want the formula, I want the apple juice. Then you move on, and you discover, I don't know, orange soda, root beer, or something like that. Right? Then you discover Coke, get your first try of beer. Oh, don't give me that kiddie stuff, I want a beer. Right? Then you move up to wine and scotch, and you have elevated taste, sophisticated taste, the fine wine, not that cheap table stuff. You're spending $80 on a fine bottle of wine. You're going to give me some cheap beer, right? You're going to give me some poor whiskey with single malt, only the best. Your tastes get more sophisticated. This is not me pushing drinking, by the way, which is not the topic of the thing. I'm trying to get an analogy or metaphor, mushroom. So what happens, somebody offers you, you know, when you're at this sophisticated level and, you know, you get wine connoisseurs monthly, you get it every month, and somebody offers you a root beer or a bottle of baby formula, right, or a glass of apple, would you like a glass of apple, you're on the airplane, would you like a glass of apple juice with that steak? Can I see the wine menu, please? Okay. So what we want to do in life is we want to go from... being like Homer Simpson, where the whole thing in life is a ball game and a cheap beer, not even good beer, but like cheap beer and a ball game, and that's the highest. That's the highest of that. You want to move up the levels where your tastes are more sophisticated, right? Where the biggest thrill in life is not a ball game and it's not a beer. It's something more sophisticated. And can we all... For you, it's hockey. Okay, whatever. You get the idea. You want to move up, right? So the same thing. Spirituality is sophisticated. It's subtle. It's a kol demama daka. It's not your body. It's not in your face. It's not. It doesn't grab you very powerfully. Physical pleasures, this being the topic here, sexuality, are very hard to ignore. And when you're trying to choose in life, like what's going to get my attention, so you have to take the time to develop a taste, a sophisticated taste for giving, for chesed, for seeing truth through Torah, through working on yourself, self-improvement, growing. And that has to give you a certain pleasure. And if you don't focus on that, you won't even hear it. You won't even taste it. You know, it's like if you go to Homer Simpson and you give him a fine bottle of wine, like he won't know what to do with it. He'll guzzle it all down in one shot. So if you're confronted with sexuality at the wrong time in your life and in the wrong setting, you at best you'll waste precious years of spiritual growth. At worst, you might never crawl out of it. You hear what I'm saying? It's a taste that you have to work on. Ruchnius is something that you have to give it a chance to grow. If you don't do that, it's not going to grow. It's going to be very hard for you to be swept up. So overwhelmed, I have to go out and do chesed. I have to go to that shir. Right? You can get to that point. There are great people. We get to that. You got to work on it, though. And if there's powerful things in your life that grab your attention, you know, sometimes she physically grabs you, so then you're not going to be paying attention. And you're going to miss it. Another reason, and this one you probably heard a lot, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, that premarital sex is probably one of the reasons that it is, not that it's probably forbidden, it is forbidden, but one of the reasons that God probably decided to forbid it is that it affects her future marriage. Now let's just get this down. Your future marriage, b'shah tova u'mutzlachet, is the single most important relationship. I would say the single most important thing in your entire life. It's more important than your relationship with your kids. It's the most important thing, that even more important than your Rebbe. Erase that one, right? It's the most important relationship you have. Anyone who took my course knows it's more important than the relationship with your parents. It's the most important relationship you're going to have. This one person, hopefully for good, will have more an effect on your experience at work, your experience with your kids, your experience. Every aspect of your life is going to be affected by your relationship with this person. Hopefully for the good. And if you have a powerful, loving relationship with your wife, then it will simply transform your whole experience in every area of life. And if you don't, God forbid, then it will pull you down in every area of your life. And by the way, I saw this. I remember when I was sort of by comparison, I saw this. I was at the third floor of Reuben when I was in YU, and my roommate, great guy, Eli Pupko from Miami, he was the dorm counselor. The truth is, I started out as dorm counselor. Something happened. He became the dorm counselor. But we both saw on a regular basis, and then I became a dorm counselor in yeshivas for a few years. We both saw that the single most powerful factor in a student's success at YU, and this is true, I saw this in yeshiva also, was how they're doing with their roommates. If they had problems with the roommates, like they had to move out kind of problems, like serious problems with the roommates, it just weighed down on them. It ruined everything. They couldn't concentrate and cheer. They were not happy. The food didn't taste good. Nothing went right if they were fighting with the roommates. If they had great roommates set up, so they could hate their shir, God forbid, and they could have trouble, I don't know, in SciSims this and with that college, and they're late with that paper. But they at least, they could work it out because they had a safe place to come home to. They had a certain amount of serenity. They could come back. They had a support group. They had roommates that were there for them. They could come back, and they were okay. If they didn't have that, they had no place to come home to. They had nothing. And that was usually the first thing you'd have to work on, to make sure somebody had a good roommate situation. Well, this is a roommate for life. Okay, so how does premarital sexuality negatively, deleteriously affect your marriage? So you've heard a lot before, so just to throw out two quick ideas, based on what we already said, that if you spend a certain number of years of your life before you get married viewing women as, I could have, is this a woman I want to have a physical relationship with, then you train yourself to look at women that way. You do it for years with, I don't know how many thousands of people that you meet in a given year. So it becomes really embedded, hardwired into your nervous system that that's how you view women. So now you go ahead and you marry this woman, and you're supposed to relate to her on a deeper level. It's hard. A lot of men don't get it. They don't get it. And that's why a lot of times, as the couple gets a little bit older, so the marriage has problems. And not only that, but if you spend all those years focusing on the superficiality of other women, is this a woman that I can have a physical relationship, that's in your mind that when you get married, then forget about your relationship with your wife, you'll continue to do that with other women. And that obviously will erode your marriage. So I think that when God said, don't have premarital relations, he wasn't trying to make our lives difficult. He was actually trying to make our lives fulfilled and meaningful. Both in this world and the next. Because after all, God cares about our spiritual well-being here. And our psychological health and our spiritual well-being for eternity. And let's just remember, I know this is a separate reason, but let's just remember how serious it is in God's eyes. The God who made us and who loves us and watches over us every day. So at the least, for some of these things that one could be involved in, he's over a lav, which is makos, which is the right to raise it. And some of them are chayav koreit, which is crazy, but that's a very serious punishment. It's a very serious punishment. We know that he says, don't be like the Knanim and the Mitzrim, who are involved in all sorts of stuff, and their whole culture of sexuality was abomination in God's eyes. Now, I wasn't going to say this because I didn't check it out. So I don't know if it's true. But I'm like an amateur student of history. I like to read about history. It's my. I'm sure if a historian went through this, you could find that this doesn't work every time. But I've read about a lot of societies, whether it's the Incans or the Aztecs or all sorts of societies, ancient Rome. And I'm not an expert. But I always notice that shortly before they get wiped off the face of the earth, they seem to reach a certain breakthrough point in promiscuity, in sexuality, in illicit sexuality. The societies I just mentioned in particular, but there are others as well. Ancient Chinese society, surprisingly, a lot of them. It seems to be, and God has said explicitly by Eretz Yisrael and by the Jews, at a certain point, I will not tolerate. So it means a lot to God. Why? Because we mean a lot to God. So that's why premarital sex is not allowed. Okay, now that we know that it's not allowed, why it's not allowed, and I'm sure there are many other reasons, all I want to do is give you basically three ideas how to set healthy boundaries so you can have, have good relationships with women during your college years. Yes? Any questions at this point?
Yeah, what's the source? Where does it say you shall not have premarital relations?
So that's an excellent question. I don't want to discuss it in this framework. I don't want to discuss it. The Torah says not to treat your daughter as a zonah. There's a discussion what that means. But many posts can feel that means to allow her or to enable her or to encourage her to set her up to have relations outside the realm of marriage. Okay? There are others who bring different psukim. There is a discussion. There's an opinion that it's only Durabanan. Is that the right thing? Right, it's a very interesting sugya. I think it's pretty clear that it's not allowed in Judaism. What the exact issue is, I think, would be a better discussed at a better time. Okay? Okay. So, establishing healthy limits. So the easiest thing for me to do at this point is just to say, follow the halakha. But I know that I'm speaking to a lot of different people, some people not even in this room, apparently, and I don't know where everybody's at. But when you look at the wisdom of the halakha, it's clear that God is trying to make life easy. And the rabbis picked up on that, and when they added on to what Hashem gave us, they too were trying to make our life easy. So for example, they said, don't observe the laws of Yichud. If you observe the laws of Yichud, then you're fine. That's the golden red line. Golden red. The red golden line. That's the main line. So I would just tell you simply, and I will tell you others, the simplest thing to do is follow the halacha. Follow Allah with regard to Negiya. Follow Allah with regard to Yichud. With regard to Kol Isha. Do your best with regard to Histaklut. We discussed that in our classes with staring at women. But if you follow Allah, then it makes life a lot easier. Is it always easy to follow Allah? No. No. But it's like, if you always pay your taxes, you'll never have any problems. Right? If you don't pay your taxes, well, that can make things that are not easy also. Is it always easy to pay your taxes? No, it'd be easier sometimes not to pay your taxes. Okay, but if you pay your taxes, you won't have problems. The same thing. Hashem says, I want you to stay away from certain things. This is the way to do it. And he gave us the guidelines. So on top of that, or beyond that, or on the side of that, or for those of you who are not going to follow halacha, or not, wherever you're at, let me just throw out a couple ideas. You have to make for yourself red lines. You know, it's like this whole thing, I'll go to a restaurant, and I'll eat the fish. Most of you guys probably eat fish, but whatever. I'll eat salad, but I won't. Okay, so the truth is, it obviously it's better not to go to a non-kosher restaurant, I understand. But I respect a guy who says, you know what, I'm going to go. I have a lot of friends, and they're not religious, or they're not Jewish, and they're going, and I'm going to go with them. And I'm going to go to a non-kosher restaurant, which once again, halachically, is an extremely problematic thing, even if you eat the salad. Even if you eat the salad, it's very problematic. But let's say the guy's like, listen, Rabbi, I'm going to a non-kosher restaurant. That's the reality. So I would tell him, okay, you have to draw for yourself some red lines. You know? Are you going to eat pig? He's like, no. Are you going to eat shellfish? No. So what are you going to eat? And he thinks it through. He says, you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm only going to go to dairy restaurants. Or I'm only going to go to, I'll only get X, Y, and Z. That's already a giant step up then. Well, I'll go and it'll be okay. And then you go once, twice, three times, and third time you're eating everything. Right? So whenever you're in a situation which is, let's say, a little beyond what the halacha would suggest, you have to, so to speak, make your own red lines. You have to. Let me ask you, don't raise your hand. Is there anybody here who would drink and drive? I said, don't raise your hand. Right. I think everybody here knows that you don't drink and drive. Right? I mean, it's not even like you have to be an idiot to drink and drive, or get into a car with somebody who's driving and drank, right? We know that already. By the way, that came out in the 80s. When I was growing up, everybody started to say, oh, maybe it's not so cool. They started all these things, mothers against drunk driving, this, that, and the other thing. By your day already, it's like you're an idiot to do it. It's like smoking, right? It's like you look at a guy who smokes, like, that was like 20 years ago, man. Cool people don't smoke anymore. It's stupid. It's bad for you, right? We do other things now. There's drugs. Lots of other things. You know, the smoke? So the same thing. You don't drink and drive. It's just stupid. Good. That's a red line. In other words, you have people who are drinking. Like the parents don't want them to drink. The teachers don't want them to drink. No, but none of their authority figures want them to drink. Like, I don't care. I'm going to drink. But I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to drink and drive. Okay. You know what? I respect that. I personally would sit down with you and tell you probably better not to drink. But okay. You're at where you're at. I got a red line. I'm not going to drink and drive. So you know what? You don't drink and hang out with girls. Cars and drinking? No. Girls and drinking? It's also no. It's a red line. You draw for yourself a red line. And say, you know what, Rabbi, listen, I have a lot of friends with girls. I'm going to college. I'm going to hang out with girls. Yeah, tell me not to do this, that. Ah. So make a red line for yourself. You want a great red line? If there's drinking and there are girls and they're in the same room, you don't be in that room. You don't be in that room. That's not so hard. Yeah, we have to give up your entire college experience because of that? Well, actually, nowadays, probably, yeah. But okay, right. But no, there's plenty of other lot of things to do in college besides that. I think there's classes and stuff. But I'll give you another one. I'll give you another one. You know, they say the famous phrase, location, 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 right? Choose certain locations that you're just not going to put yourself in that situation. So I just mentioned one. No, clubs. Clubs would be one. Right? It's a death trap. It is a death trap. I'm not even being prudish. I know this sounds like I'm not even prudish. It's just not going to happen. It's not a place you can go. You want to hear another one? A gym. A co-ed gym. It's a meat market. You can't go to a co-ed gym. Go to a guy's gym. Spend the money that you would spend on the year's worth of monthly payments and buy equipment invite a friend over to spot. That's what we call it, spotting, right? And lift weights at home. A co-ed gym is a meat market. Anyone who's been there knows. Right? What else? Concerts are a mixed bag. A great story. I had a student of mine. He's married now. He's actually in residency. Great guy. When I was back in Mibisaret, so you don't know him. And he called me up for the States once. This is in his college days. He's like, he was a big concert goer. Big guy. He's a big drummer. He called me up and said, Rabbi, listen, I don't know what to do. There's two concerts. This is in the good old days. There's Fish and Dave Matthews. And I don't know which one to go to. So I said, well, you know, can you give me, it's not usually a sock type of thing that I deal with. Can you give me a little something to work? It's like this, Rabbi. So at a Fish concert, there's going to be a lot of drugs. A lot of drugs. I knew him. He wasn't into drugs. He wasn't interested. He was interested in music. There's going to be a lot of drugs. But at the Dave Matthews concert, about most of the people who are fans of Dave Matthews are women. It's like 80%. 8 out of 10 people go to Dave Matthews concert. So it's going to be a woman fest. So I'm not sure which is better. I'm not sure which is worse, right? He's saying, so which one should I go to? So we had a whole like 15-minute discussion about if you should go to Fish or Dave Matthews. Now Fish is no longer around, so you can't even have the discussion, right? Right. So you're quite on the rock. Huh? Oh, they're back. Right. Unbelievable. Dr. Fishman, by the way, is my orthodontist. I don't know if you know that. The father of the two guys named Fish. Nice guy from Fayetteville and Syracuse. Anyways, I respected this guy because this guy was trying to put himself in a situation that he felt he could handle. And he was being realistic, and he knew what was out there. He was drawing for himself red lines. I remember one time he called me up, and this is really not so relevant, but it's just also a great question. He called me up and said, listen, I'm going to see Bruce Springsteen. Remember that? The Boss, right. Now, he has backup singers, and his wife is on the tour, and she's singing also. Is that a problem with Kolisha? So we had a whole 10-minute discussion if there's a way to get around Kolisha. I didn't think there was. With the backup singers, he sings when she sings, and they're all singing together. We're all singing, is okay. So I had a lot of respect for this guy because he's going to concerts. Don't get in his way. But he wants to have certain red lines for himself. Now, obviously, once again, I'm going to make a pitch for halacha. Follow halacha, and you'll never have any problems. But whatever you do in college, you have to be realistic with yourself, and you have to know what's out there. And you have to know, this I will not do. Because as soon as you say, yeah, it'll be all right, yeah, something could happen that you're going to regret for all the reasons I mentioned. Okay, so that was that. Avoid death traps. Let me give you another one. This is a great tip. When you interact with women in college, do it in a group setting. So if a bunch of people are going out to play putt-putt, or you're going out to dinner, or you're going out wherever, then don't do one-on-ones. That's where the problems are. Go in a group. You're going to study with somebody, so don't do the one-on-one chavrusa for whatever, biology, economics. Right? That creates, as a matter of fact, I would say even if you're in the library where there's hundreds of other people, right? It's not a problem of yichud. But you you have a one-on-one with this woman, what's going to happen? Nothing's going to happen right there, but what's going to happen? Josh?
You're
going to
fall in love.
Okay. Yeah, or you're going to fall in lust. There's going to be probably something built up. You're forming a relationship, right? So you have to be smart. I remember when I was in camp, Hask, and the truth is I think I would do this differently, but you know, I understood why we did things, at that point in our life, why we did it. We had days off. Every week you get a day off. So you go with other people, have a day off. You go hang out, you go do stuff. So usually I'd go with friends, guys, and we'd have a day off. So I remember once somebody had a car, and a bunch of us went to some, was it like Bear Mountain? I don't know, something like that. And we went, guys and girls. So today, looking back, I would be uncomfortable with that. But for where it was at, in a group, and then when we got there, the guys went one place and the girls got. So when we were together, it was very much, it wasn't a one-on-one. A one-on-one creates relationship, and a relationship leads places that nobody knows. Nobody knows where it's going to go. Okay. With that said and done, what about actually having a relationship during your college years? possible. You can meet a great girl, get married, set up a wonderful Jewish home. Could happen, right? So, the truth is, before I discuss this, dating during college years, are there any questions so far? No questions. All right. Usher has questions, but he's kind enough not to ask it. Later, same for the end. Okay. So, let me mention an idea about dating during college years. So, you're all getting to the point, and for each of you, it's probably a slightly different point, where you're ready to meet somebody and get married. Right? Probably not now, and not next year, and not the year after, but sometime, it could be for many of you near the end of college, could be a realistic thing. So let me just throw out an idea. You have to sit down at some point. This is kind of like what you do with a career. I don't know if you guys are thinking about career yet. Maybe you should. It's coming up sooner than you'd like. So at some point, you got to sit down and kind of take the big picture. You're not 14 anymore. And you're talking about big things. Someday I'm going to be working. I'm going to be, well, what am I going to be? I should kind of think about that because I'm going to have to declare a major and I might even decide what college to go to based on what I want to do. So that's a more immediate decision. So you think these things through, right? Probably most of you have done that already. Thought ahead a few years, where you want to be when you're 25. So the same thing with women. The same thing with getting married. About what age do you think you'll want to start being married? About what age would marriage be on the horizon? So once you have an idea of where you think you're going to be when marriage is on the horizon, then you can work backwards and decide when it makes sense to date. Because what's going to happen if you date and marriage is not on the horizon? I'm a freshman in college, I've got 4 years. After that, I want to get an MBA for 3 years. And then when I'm 26, I'll start thinking about that. All right, so you're 20 and you're 19 and you're not going to, according to your plan, you got another 6 years. So what happens if you date now? What's going to happen? What for sure will happen, 99 out of 100 cases, this is not statistically researched, you're going to get hurt. It's going to be pain. There's going to be pain. Because it's not going to work out, is it? If you're a freshman in college, what are the chances you're going to marry this girl? 1 out of 100. It happens. It does happen. I know it happens. Some of your parents might have. It happens. Some point in college, you meet a girl, you whoop up, boom, boom, and you're going out, it's great, and you get married, fantastic. Statistics are against you, meaning the relationship will end. I'm not even talking about what happens in a relationship. That's not even the point yet. At some point, that relationship will end. What happens when the relationship ends? Is that fun? Does that feel good? Is that enjoyable? Do you take those fond memories of that pain and heartbreak that you either suffered or inflicted or probably both? As a fond memory into your future? No. That's called baggage. It's called skeletons in your closet. You can get a shrink for that. Right? So what's going to happen? If you spend the next, let's say, 4 years, I got 4 years, Rabbi, when I get out of college, after 3 years, 4 years, then I'll start dating because then I can kind of see it happening. Great. In the meantime, I'm going to date for fun. Great. So that means for 4 years, you're going to experience pain. Okay. Hey. That's a choice we all make. Because I assure you, unless you marry the girl, it will end. And when it ends, it will hurt. And the longer it goes on for, well, then what happens at the end? The more it hurts. Right. And if you do get physical, which is almost, you know, unless you're one of the Avengers, like a Man of Steel, Iron Man or something, it's almost for sure going to happen. Unless you're really, you know, you and she are very committed to Halacha, Zerat Hashem. Then sexuality is a relationship accelerator. It intensifies, first of all, it actually speeds up the relationship, the emotional bonding, the relationship, and it intensifies. Okay, so if you get physical and then it ends, that's even worse. It'll hurt more. The painometer just went up. So what is anybody getting? So it looks great, right? When the relationship starts and it looks fun, it looks great. But it doesn't, I think if any of you have dated in high school, probably most of you have broken up with your high school sweetheart, are about to break up, or you don't need me to drag the point out much longer. Okay, I really only have one last tip to give you. You ready? So you know location, location, location. So the last one, the last tip I would give you while in college. Well, let me just tell you, before I give you the tip, let me just tell you something my mom told me. It's really great advice. My mom, I didn't do it, but it was great advice. Which is all the best advice, right? If you don't actually take it. So my mom told me, I complained to my mom during college. I'm like, you know, I don't have time for this. I was like, why are you? I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. And I'm busy with this. Yeah, it's really busy. So classic, like that Hasidic story with the Rebbe. My house is too small. Oh, move the goat in. Rebbe, it's even worse now. Move the chickens in. Move the cow in. Rebbe, it's, move them all out. Yeah? So my mom said, go get a part-time job. That's what I did in college. It was great. I'm like, no, Mom, I don't have any time. I have homework. I have shiur. I have this. I have that. I don't have time. You want me to get a part-time job? She said, yeah. What you do is when you have a part-time job in college, you have to organize your time. You simply will not survive. When you have to be at work, whatever number of hours a week, then you got to do your homework here, and you got to wake up at there because you have class at that point. I mean, you got to get it together. And you do. You hear where I'm going with this? So the tip that I'm going to give you in college is to make a schedule. Make a very full, we say in Hebrew, toses. It's probably overflowing. It should be an unbelievable schedule. I mean, think about it. Wherever you are, you're in YU, you're not in YU, so you have classes. God's gift after classes is homework. That's great. Do your homework. Do it. Actually, do your homework. It's not high school. You're paying for this. Your parents pay for that also. Do your homework. That's a good another few hours, right? Learn something. If you're going to college, you might as well learn something. Go ahead and find two shiurim a week offered on campus. Not one. One is like, one's great. One is better than nothing. One is a million times better than nothing. Find two shiurim a week that you can go to that fit into your schedule. Try and get a chavrusa, which is tricky, but not impossible. Start during the summer once you know your courses. Go ahead and exercise. Get an exercise routine. Not at the co-ed gym, of course, right? But get an exercise routine. A little bit every day. Boom, before you know it, what a fantastic life you have. You're walking, you're lifting weights, you're going to shiur, you're going to minyan, you have classes, you have homework, you have time for anything. Sure, if you find time after that, get a part-time job, not kidding you. I actually took a job in the weekends at a place that had in Brooklyn. So there you go. Look at that. That's just what the Mishnah says. Yafa Talmud Torah Derech Eretz. Talmud Torah and Derech Eretz, job, having a job and studying are yafed, they're nice, they're good, they go well together. Shiagia shneyem mishakach haravon, the effort that you're going to put into keeping your job and learning a little Torah, having a chavrusa, having a seder, having a daf yomi, you're going to forget about sin. Oh yeah, sin, right. Next week, I'll schedule that next week. You won't have time. You won't have time. So if there's location, 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 I'd say vocation, vocation, vocation. Keep yourself busy, busy, busy. It's the single greatest thing. When I was in the Army, so when they would make us run around a lot, you know, ostensibly to punish us because we didn't do what we needed to do, they used to say, like, you know, you guys didn't pass the inspection. So everybody see that water tower, pick up your backpacks, everybody run around that 3 times, you have 2 minutes to be back. Zuz! So they zuz, right? So they hated this. Once we chanted as we were running, Chor Beluz Shaveti Zuz. A hole in the schedule equals running. Meaning they don't have anything for us to do right now because they didn't plan the day. So they're going to pretend to punish us. They're going to make us run. So our commanding officer heard us yelling that, right? Chor Beluz Shaveti Zuz. He killed the rest of the day. He made us run. He killed us. But it's true. When you have open time, then you just kind of find things to fill your time. Right? As a matter of fact, there's a mission in Ketubah. The mission says in Ketubah. The Gemara there is talking about if you're wealthy and you bring help into the maidservants and help into the family to make it easier for your wife, you're wealthy. Your wife shouldn't have to do the sewing, so you bring someone to do the sewing. Your wife shouldn't have to do the cooking. You bring a cook in, etc., etc. And even though your wife is committed, according to the law, according to the Gemara Ketubah, to do a certain number of things in the household, if you are wealthy, it's okay to bring in help. That's fine. The Gemara says, though, at a certain point, you have to stop. You have to leave her at least something basic, some kind of basic sewing, something. Why? Because when people are bored and they have nothing to do, shiyamum leads to avera. Avera meaning of sexuality. Right? The bored wife at home is not a good scenario. And it's true for him. It's true for women. It's 10 times more true for men. Don't get bored in college. Stay busy, and that's your best. That's your best ticket for success. I'll just draw one last thing that I see. I wrote myself a note at the end after I gave this class. There's a lot of great stuff out there to get you inspired, specifically in this area. There are so there's books. You can ask your rabbis if they have any books about family, about sexuality, about marriage. There's websites also. There's websites. That deal with this issue specifically. And they inspire you. They are there to help you stay committed to the committed relationship that, God willing, you all have in the future. Okay, we are basically done. Does anybody have any questions? Any ideas? You can challenge me, by the way. You can ask me, Josh, you want to challenge me or anything? You want to? Any realistic scenarios?
What do you think about getting married during college?
So you know David Epstein, the drummer, he's a fantastic drummer, he sits in the back sometimes, he lives he's from the first year of the yeshiva, actually. So he actually, they had a panel discussion with these Friday nights, and they were talking about this issue, about, you know, girls at college, etc. And he said, well, do what I do, I got married. He was in some small private school, and there were very few Jews there, and he met his wife, and they got married. I don't think it's realistic for most people. Number two, there's a Parnassus issue. To figure out Parnassus. Number three, you have to be mature enough to get married. Right? We don't want to rush somebody in to get married to save them from being involved in all sorts of stuff, and then they have a bad marriage because they're too immature. But for some people, yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I was in YU, I think today it's much more common. But when I was in YU, it was becoming common to get engaged at the end of college. And there were a few couples here and there who were married like their last year. Now I think it's become commonplace that you have couples who are finishing college. Which, if they're mature enough for it, then yeah, that's fantastic. If they're not mature enough, then that's a problem. Yeah?
I'm going to be doing real estate over the summer.
You're going to be what?
Doing real estate over the summer. Should I try to avoid being alone in apartments with, like, junior clients?
Yeah, 100%.
Yes.
You mean if you go to an empty apartment and you're showing a client?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you should avoid that. You should avoid that.
There.
Listen.
I could, like, meet up with her and be like, oh, this is awkward.
Listen, right. So this is not the scenario for a discussion on some of the ways out of Yichud. In most cases, if you leave the front door wide open, it will probably help. Probably be fine. But if you can arrange it that, let's say there's a few clients coming in, you ask one of the women, another client to take her, and you take a male client, that would simplify things. Right. Okay. We'll talk about this. Yeah.
There are not too long of a, like, if you're dating for marriage, is there too long of a time to be dating? Like.
Oh, that's also probably a whole other, that's a very personal thing. No, I don't think there's a set formula. The idea is that the longer you wait, two things happen. Sexually, physically becomes very difficult, and it places enormous strain on the relationship, which can actually undo the relationship. So that's right. In other words, if you get engaged when you're at the end of sophomore year, and we'll get married the end of senior year. Talk that one over. That might not work. That simply might end that might destroy the relationship. Right? Yeah. We'll take, you know, let's just do this another two or three questions. Then we're going to move over, and I'm going to introduce Rav Machlis, man who needs no introduction. Yeah. David. I'm sorry. David first, then Joshua.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Question.
Nice and loud.
So your opinion on, like, JCCs as, like, a gym, would you say JCCs okay versus a regular 24-hour fitness?
Listen, if a guy's going to be like, listen, Rabbi, you know, come on. And I'd rather he, you know, connect with a Jewish woman than with a non-Jewish woman.
No, because
I don't know who I'm dealing with.
No,
but no, it's co-ed, so what's the difference?
Okay, well, the difference with, like, this JCC is that there are no young females, all old fat Russians.
Oh, so, okay. Okay, I haven't been to Denver, so I don't know what's going on in JCC.
The most physical, I've gone with a woman at this JCC, nothing sexual, it's basketball, and she seemingly had destroyed me, so... Wasn't anything.
Did you want to admit that in front of a. Maybe when that goes online, Roman. That's alright. Anyway.
Yeah, like, this JCC, yeah. There is no female I've ever seen my age or attractive.
I hear you. I think you get the idea, right? Obviously, you have to apply what I've said. You have to apply what I said to the situation in your hometown. Generally speaking, a gym in most places have women in it who you would want to look at. Right. By the way, just technically, because I have to give you the halacha, an old Russian woman bear or whatever, you know, working the bench at 250 in your JCC, and she's 55 and you're pressed. So if she, just technically speaking, if she's wearing short sleeves, you're not allowed to look at her at the part of her arms exposed. But, right. Yeah.
So if you can go to the gym, what if you want to go running outside? If there's like a chance that you're going to run past like a woman who's also taking a run, is that a
problem? No, so be smart. Don't run on a beach.
Okay, fine, but what if you just want to run on the running path? Is that like not okay to do?
In the city that happens all the time.
Oh, on running paths?
Yeah.
Oh, running paths. Yeah, running paths. Running paths. Running paths. Running paths.
Use the treadmill at the gym, and you can't like... There aren't any single gender gyms in Dallas, Texas.
I hear you. Not yet, right? You'll start one, right? You can't put yourself in a situation where you're going to see women who are, I'm giving you this straight halacha, who are not properly dressed.
You should run in place in our bedroom.
Listen, if you're gonna walk in downtown Manhattan or downtown Dallas, there's no difference if you run. You know what I'm saying? I live there, so I have to go from here to here. So who's? But if there's a running path and everybody's wearing, you know, tank tops and whatever they wear, then I think you should find a better place to run, even if that means the unpleasant experience of putting your, you know, your laptop and standing on a treadmill. Run in the woods somewhere. Find the woods. Cross country. Yeah, we'll do one more, two more, and then we're gonna yeah.
Would you say that the shidduch system is the only way to end up getting married?
No, it's not the only way. It's not the only way. But once again, for those who are in my course, instead of seeing a woman that you're physically attracted to, and then, yeah, well, we'll work out the fact that we have the same values, or she's a good person or not, and whatever, hopefully that'll be good. You first find out that she has the same values as you, religious ones, and you find out that she's a great person. None of that is guaranteed, obviously, but at least you have a lead. And then you meet her and decide if she's physically attractive. You see, it's much safer. It's much safer. Listen, if you go to a, you know, you go to a place where the women are of a high quality, you gotta go like Camp Pass, and you see a woman there you find very attractive, so probably with a little bit of research, you could find out she's a wonderful person. She's working at Camp Pass, right? Not to generalize. Okay, so yeah. I have plenty of friends who... I have one friend, he's a great rabbi, he's a big Talmud Chacham. Do they still do this? He was an MTA guy. He got set up with a central girl, and he was a senior. They still do that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. They got married. They actually got married. She was a junior, right? He's a senior. They went out on this whole thing. I don't know if you guys know about it. And they really liked each other. After some time in YU, they stayed together 1 year in Israel, 2 years. And they got married. I lost track of him years ago, but he was a rabbi in America. So yeah, some people, great. It's not the easiest system to work with. The non-shidduch system. It gets messy. You get in a lot of relationships where you get hurt. Last question, and then we're going to get ready for... Oh, yeah, we have 3 more minutes. Yeah, last question.
You said that you're supposed to keep yourself busy, right? But let's say you already have a girlfriend, and how are you supposed to fit in time... girlfriend and time for her.
Excellent. Listen, if you already have a girlfriend and it's a serious relationship and you see a future in this relationship, right? So listen, if you can get married, get married. You can't get married. Let's say you got to wait 3 years. Now your parents all tell you, you got to be last year of college, whatever, you got to finish college, you got to have 3 years. What are you going to do for 3 years? She's a wonderful person, you're very close with her, you're very emotionally attached, and you're physically attracted to her. So what I said applies tenfold. To stay busy. I'll just end with this following thing. And what I tell you, you have to apply it to your situation, because I don't know you and your situation. There was another couple, not the couple I just mentioned, but another couple. His name was Mark. He was Shana Bet at Shalavim, when I was in Shalavim after YU. His girlfriend was at Midrash and Moriah, I don't know if Shana Olaf, whatever. And this is the contact that they had. Ready? They spoke Saturday night on the phone, and then every other week they met on Fridays for a couple hours. And she sent a cake every time he finished a Masechet. He finished all of Seder Moed Gomorrah by the end of his Shana Bet, and the cakes were good. But she would not allow him to call her except for that designated slot Saturday night, and she would not allow him to meet her except for that designated time on Erev Shabbos. I think once in a while they did Shabbos together here and there if they had. But why? Because she wanted him to develop as much as possible during those precious years that he was Shana Bet. And he so wanted for her while she was in her year in Israel. So you have to figure it out for yourself. What is me growing? And yet, healthy enough that we can maintain the relationship. Because no contact, and it's very hard to maintain a relationship. I understand. 100%. It's a very personal question. Let's stop here. Gentlemen, you have much better people out there than I who can guide you in these things. You have your rabbis, right? You have Shana Bet guys. Now you have... You have parents, and I highly recommend that you use your resources and stay focused on the goal, which is a lasting, beautiful, committed marriage. Gentlemen, we're going to move into this room. Give yourself a little 2-minute break. I'm sorry that we went right up near the end. And please get ready for Rav Machlis, a man who needs no introduction.
Free marriage.